This is an audio archive edition of WINA's Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot, made available online by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network, cvillepodcast.com.
Michael Davis is a reporter, editor, and educator. From 1998 to 2007, he was a senior editor and family TV columnist for TV Guide. His new book is Street Gang, The Complete History of Sesame Street. Honored to welcome Michael Davis to the program. Michael, how are you, sir?
I'm fine, and I have a question for you. I'm going to turn the tables on you.
Yes, sir.
Are you in radio? Because when you were a young man, at about age 3 or 4, you watched Kermit the Frog for Sesame Street News in his trench coat and top and his hat and his microphone.
Absolutely.
Was that the inspiration?
Absolutely.
Very good.
I'll tell you, Michael, so many years ago, in November of 1969, yes. I was sitting on the couch at Michelle Lauk's house on Cornell Road in Atlanta, Georgia, in Emory, Georgia.
Mm-hmm.
And her mother, Sharon, was watching us for the afternoon, and we were both sitting there watching the premiere of Sesame Street.
Wow.
We were right there at the very beginning.
My goodness, you have an outstanding memory. Wow.
Well, I was reminded.
Okay.
So let me ask you first. I have so many questions.
Yes.
Let me ask you first, where did the idea come from? I mean, you've been writing about television for many years, but when did you know I'm going to write the history of Sesame Street?
Well, I wrote a piece for the 35th anniversary of Sesame Street, and that was for TV Guide. And I just so enjoyed the experience, and I tend to over-report and over-stress when I take on an assignment. And I went looking for the book on Sesame Street, and I couldn't find it. And I thought, wow, what an opportunity this could be for someone to write this history, because I already knew that it was a very rich one, but I didn't realize how rich until I started digging in. And I spent a couple of years on my own dime doing the research and interviews in 7 or 8 states until I finally sat down and wrote a proposal for this book in 2006, and I was fortunate enough to sell it to Viking. And here we are.
Yeah.
5 years later, it's a book.
It's a wonderful book, and it's the whole story. And we also want to let folks know we're going to be giving away a free copy here in a few minutes at the end
great.
Of the interview. And we want to encourage everybody to check out the website, streetgangbook.com. Lots of good stuff there. Fun website. And so tell us where it came from. I mean, take us back to the beginning. Where did Sesame Street come from?
Well, actually, it came from the Civil Rights Movement. Some very good-hearted folks on the Upper West Side of New York, these were white people. They were very engaged in the Civil Rights Movement in New York City. And they wanted to do something to assist poor children living in the ghetto and poor children in rural America. One of those people was Joan Ganz Cooney. She's Sesame Street's mom. The other was Lloyd Morissette. He's Sesame Street's dad. They got together at a dinner party in 1966. And during that dinner party, after the main meal was served, Lloyd told the following story. He said that he had found his 3-year-old daughter, Sarah, sitting cross-legged in front of the television at 6:30 a.m. a few Sundays before. There was no program on. She was sitting there watching the test pattern, waiting for the cartoons to come on at 7 a.m., and he wondered to himself, what is it about this medium that has, you know, resulted in my daughter sitting transfixed in front of it with nothing to really watch? And he asked out loud at the party, do you think that television could be used for something grander, something better than just mere entertainment? Could television teach? And that question, asked aloud, was the impetus for Sesame Street.
We're talking with author Michael Davis. The new book is Street Gang, The Complete History of Sesame Street. So take it from there. How did it actually go from this idea at a dinner party in Manhattan to actually getting on the air?
Well, years of research it took place, and Joan Ganz Cooney did a cross country fact-finding mission that went not only through the United States but Canada to research centers, to universities, to hospitals, talking to experts in child development and education about whether this idea of creating a show for preschoolers might work. And the reaction from the educators was, this might be worth a try, because everything up to that point to try to reach the indigent had failed. And it happened at a time when there was this great awakening in America about preschool education. Now, when you were 3 years old, when Sesame Street debuted, we didn't think very much of the ability of preschoolers, what they could learn, and we didn't think they had much of an attention span. We didn't think that they could, you know, learn their numbers and letters. And
we were
colors.
Mostly, Michael, we were mostly just being babysat until kindergarten or first grade.
Exactly right. Or in a nursery school where you just played.
Yeah.
And think about 2009, the way that we view preschoolers and what we know now about that, what they can absorb. And, you know, we do know that they can follow a plot, and they can learn so much before they actually step across the threshold for public school, you know, for kindergarten. So Sesame Street came about at sort of the perfect moment in cultural history, but also in education history.
Yeah. Michael Davis is the author of Street Gang. It's the new book out on the history of Sesame Street. Talk a little bit about the puppets, because that's, of course, what most of us remember.
Sure.
It's certainly what I remember. Bert and Ernie were my favorites, and I had an Ernie puppet for years that I slept with, and it was my best friend.
Oh, yes.
I was interested to learn in your story that early on in Sesame Street, the experts, so-called experts, recommended that the children and the puppets not be on the screen together.
That's true. the experts, those who advised the writers of the show and the producers of the show, thought it was a mistake to mix fantasy and reality. But the founding producers of Sesame Street, three men, they all had worked on Captain Kangaroo, and they knew that when the captain talked to Bunny Rabbit or Mr. Moose, that children accepted that, and it didn't confuse them, and in fact, it was great entertainment. And Captain Kangaroo, with Bob Keeshan, taught many great things on that show. So, you know, they shot test episodes of Sesame Street without the puppets or the Muppets being on the street, and those test episodes absolutely bombed. The kids completely rejected it.
We wanted the puppets.
Absolutely. It wasn't until Jim Henson came in with his ideas for this new puppet universe, with ideas for Big Bird and for Oscar and for Bert and for Ernie, that the show really came to life and got its wonderful sense of, its joyful sense of surprise and humor that worked on two levels, for the child but also for the caregiver watching along with the child. Because I'm guessing in your experience and in the experience of your listeners, somebody watched with them, whether it was grandma or a babysitter or an older sibling. Sesame Street had this unique ability to draw in the adult viewer.
And folks may not remember, but just a few years later, Sesame Street, of course, premiered in 69. A few years later, those Muppets were part of the launch of another television franchise called Saturday Night Live.
Oh, absolutely. Jim Henson was given an opportunity to do, you know, much more adult humor on Saturday Night Live in its first year. And, you know, Jim Henson did not want to be pigeonholed as a children's performer. He thought that would be like being in a prison. He didn't mind being known as a family entertainer. That was fine with him. But he really wanted to reach the entire range of ages in a household. He didn't want to be just thought of as a kiddie performer. And part of this is because he took a walkabout in Europe when he was a young man, and he saw the artistry of puppetry in Europe and Asia, and he came back determined to try to introduce this to our culture. And he was wildly successful, of course, not only with Sesame Street, but with The Muppet Show, which was the greatest success in the history of syndicated television.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. We're talking with Michael Davis. He's a reporter, editor, educator. His new book is Street Gang, The Complete History of Sesame Street. Michael, let's talk a little bit about some of the criticisms. My generation has been accused of being the victim of Sesame Street with, you know, that our brains form differently as a result of it. And that's one reason MTV worked, because it was sort of that same thing. We were right there when MTV launched and we were ready for it because it was, you know, click, 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 transition, 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 new image. And we had been conditioned with Sesame Street to be ready for those videos.
Turned out all right. Yeah, I mean, a lot of people criticize Sesame Street for its pace and its quick cuts in the early years. And, you know, they patterned the show after Rowan and Martin's Laugh-In. Joan Ganz Cooney said, "I want a Laugh-In for children." So it had that same rapid pace. The show's very different now, almost 40 years later. It's not so frenetic, and there aren't so many images blasting back and forth. And, you know, there's really no empirical evidence that suggests that Sesame Street helped to create a generation of adults who have short attention spans and, you know, who are hooked on music videos. I do think, though, that to the positive, it created generations of children who got their first inoculation into the culture by watching Sesame Street. They saw Ray Charles, and they saw Johnny Cash, and they saw Yo-Yo Ma, and Itzhak Perlman, and, you know, on and on and on. These wonderful guest stars who came to Sesame Street. When I was doing the research for the book, the interviewing, I had a wonderful day with James Taylor. And he told me quite seriously that he believes the second and third generations of his fan base came as a result of Sesame Street, that his appearances were so important because they introduced him to children, and then when they grew up, they remembered him. And he did this song called Jellyman Kelly. Now, maybe some of your listeners are nodding as I say it. And when James goes out for summer tours, invariably people will yell out, "Hey, play Jellyman Kelly." And sometimes he does.
We're talking with Michael Davis. The new book is Street Gang, and you can check it out online at streetgangbook.com, A Complete History of Sesame Street. Michael, also, it prepared this generation. Wouldn't you say it, it really showed a generation of children what diversity looks like? I mean, there was Asian and black and white all together in the same neighborhood, and they weren't having a problem.
Yes, and it was, you know, for its time, it was really bold. It was one of the few integrated shows on television, certainly the only one for children. And not only were the live actors, you know, the cast representative of all cultures, but the children they brought in to populate the street, who were not professional actors, they were just kids from neighborhoods nearby, also were, you know, a little rainbow coalition. So I think you can't measure the importance of Sesame Street for a child, say, growing up in, I don't know, Idaho, who lived very far away from an urban environment, maybe never got to see an African-American person, you know, being introduced to these wonderful characters who taught tolerance and fair play and politeness and you know, understanding, all the affective strategies that Sesame Street promoted beyond the cognitive, you know, teaching kids how to think and how to count and how to differentiate. That was a big success, but I think it was equally successful in creating a world, if I may, where that is more tolerant and more accepting, and a world where voters aged 25 to 40 just elected the first African-American man president. I believe that Sesame Street played a role in ushering in the era of Obama.
What do you think of the most significant ways that Sesame Street has changed over the last few decades or evolved?
Well, it has changed as children have changed, as parents' views of children has changed. I think that the show definitely is a little slower these days. It it plays to a bit of a younger audience, that they've lost the older 4-year-old and 5-year-old. The kids that age now think Sesame Street is babyish, and they have other shows to interest them. They go to Blue's Clues and Dora and you know, the shows on Nickelodeon and Disney Channel.
I know them well.
So Sesame Street caters now to a very young preschool audience. Therefore, Elmo has become the biggest, you know, rock star in the universe for kids age 2 and 3. You know, they come out of the womb these days saying Elmo. I don't know how that quite happens. But, you know, Elmo has this incredible ability to communicate with kids 2 and 3 years old. And I know a lot of adults run screaming out of the room, but kids just love them, can't get enough of them.
What do you think is any significant things that they're doing today that they weren't perhaps doing 40 years ago?
I don't think so. I think that they are using the sort of same ideas in new ways. I mean, I think specifically about the animation that exists now on Sesame Street. It's fresher and it's very different from the 2D animation of, you know, of 69, 70, 71.
Yeah.
They're using computer-generated stuff that's just wonderful. And in fact, this season, Bert and Ernie were CGI characters for the first time. So,
wow.
You know, the Sesame Workshop, the folks there aren't afraid to embrace emerging technologies. And in fact, there's a YouTube channel for Sesame Street. There's a podcast that you can download on iTunes. I mean, they really are pushing forward to these new delivery systems, believing that, you know, television is just one platform that they can reach preschool children.
Michael Davis, his new book is Street Gang, The Complete History of Sesame Street. Michael, it's been an honor to talk to you. It is a fantastic book.
Well, thank you for saying so. I so appreciate it, and I hope you can forgive me for being a Tar Heel from a neighboring school.
Not a problem.
All right, sir.
Not a problem. Take care. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Check it out online, folks, streetgangbook.com. It's Street Gang, The Complete History of Sesame Street. We'll open up the phone lines at 977-1070 and give away a free copy of Michael's new book to caller number 5. Caller number 5, 977-1070. A break for local news and weather. This is Charlottesville Right Now.
You've been listening to Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot. Charlottesville Right Now is broadcast live Monday through Friday on News Radio 1070 WINA from 4 to 6 p.m. Best-selling author and historian Coy Barefoot is the host and producer. To interact with Coy and his guests, you can call 434-977-1070. Coy can be reached at barefoot@wina.com. This audio download has been made possible by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network. Visit SevillePodcast.com for more.